Predicting gloom and doom for the U.S. economy sells books, attracts headlines, but is it good economics? Is the response to the 2008 financial meltdown a heroic strategy that strengthened the global economy, or is it more like a Band-Aid fix that punished none of the financial abusers, propped up the major culprits at the expense of consumers and taxpayers, and brought us closer to an even worse disaster?
Hi, this is Christine from Queens, and I don't think that the lesson was learned. The big banks are still playing God. Americans are still going further and further in debt. The credit card debt is out of control, and we just need to start living in reality now, because it could happen again.
It could happen again. Christine thinks we're headed back to the brink. What do you think? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Radio host Tom Hartman has gotten a lot of attention predicting the worst for the U.S. economy. To his audience of liberals, progressives, and other critics of American capitalism, he's the author of The Crash of 2016, The Plot to Destroy America and What We Can Do to Stop It. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you so much, John. I'd add, perhaps I offer a critique of contemporary American capitalism, but I'm not an opponent of capitalism.
Let's talk about the title of your book. It sounds like you're solidly in support of Christine's notion that we're back on the brink again.
Well, I don't think we ever left it. I would submit that the crash of 2008, which really started in 2006 when housing starts collapsed just like they did in 1927, that the crash of 2008 is still ongoing. Because the structural underpinnings of our economy, the stuff that prevents crashes and keeps economies strong, have never been restored.
And when you say that prevents crashes, do you mean the wealth of the middle class, the ability of the middle class to accumulate wealth, those sorts of things are still as weak as ever?
Well, there's a variety of things. One major structural stuff, like, you know, our banking system, you know, has replaced manufacturing as the principal driver of our economy, and yet it creates no wealth. Glass-Steagall is still gone, so commercial banks are still, you know, banks are still gambling with your checkbook deposits. Secondly, you've got, yes, the middle class has been eviscerated. We have, just in the last couple of years, 700,000 people have fallen out of the middle class. It's been millions since the 80s. And the consequence of that inequality is destructive, principally economically, because it's purchasing by the middle class that creates the demand that drives an economy. And finally, that wealth inequality is not particularly useful. In as much as you get these enormous concentrations of wealth that are not being used productively in the economy, they're not driving demand. They're instead being used for investment in the United States and overseas and stash in Swiss bank accounts. And so, you know, in ecosystems, broad and diverse, you know, a forest, a jungle, broad and diverse is resilient. Monocultures are very unresilient, very fragile.
Would you say that the Fed policy, the stimulus policy at the Fed, is what's propping things up? And should that taper off and go away next year, that we'll be back in a crash zone, not simply a cooling off period?
In short form, yes. I mean, we keep in mind half of the quantitative easing program is buying toxic securities in the banks. I think it's either $35 or $40 billion a month. Buying basically junk that's on the books of the banks. So they're slowly, you know, helping the situation somewhat. But, you know, the unregulated derivatives market that Phil Graham created in 99 and 2000 with the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, you know, went from zero to $800 trillion in 2008. And keep in mind, the GDP of the United States is only $15 trillion. The whole planet's only $65 trillion. It dropped down to around $500 trillion during the crash of 2008. It's back up in the neighborhood of $700 or $800 trillion, according to the Bank of International Settlements. So we still have these very, very, very large structural problems that are just hanging over our heads. Between the Fed and the Treasury Department and the attempts, you know, of the Obama administration, and perhaps some stimulus that will come out of Obamacare, they're basically throwing baling wire and bubble gum at this thing.
Why are derivatives such a threat? We've heard about them for decades, really. And as you say, they were created by changes in the regulatory environment in the financial system. The numbers do look scary, but things have seemed to putter along without a catastrophe, even though the numbers do tell a pretty frightening story.
Basically, the commodities market began, you know, probably back in ancient Sumeria. But if I'm a farmer and you're a baker and we want to make sure that both of us are going to get through the year, I might commit to sell half my crop to you in advance at a fixed price, and that way you can do some budgeting for your baking and I can do some budgeting for my farming, and whether I have a good year or bad year, we're both at least half protected. That's the commodities market, and you and I would be called counterparties in that market. And that futures market, that commodity futures market, had always been transparent, largely, and it had always largely been run through the Chicago Board of Trade. And it was for actual physical things, pork bellies that would be turned into bacon, wheat that would be turned into bread, oil that would be turned into diesel fuel, so that airlines could hedge their bets by buying futures in oil. What happened with the Commodity Futures Modernization Act was two things. One was that it became possible to make these kinds of bets on things that were not physical, tangible assets that you couldn't see. And as you drive down the street, you can't see that, hey, that house is underwater, that house has an $80,000 mortgage. And two, that it became possible to make bets on bets. So we start out with, you know, $1 million worth of mortgages all bundled together. And then somebody says, you know, I'll bet $1 million that $1 million is going to go bad or is going to stay good. And then somebody else says, you know, I'll bet $10 million on that $1 million bet that it's going to go bad or go good. And then somebody else says, I'll bet $100 million on that $10 million bet. And every time they make one of these bets, you know, they skim a couple hundred thousand or a couple million, or even as the bets start getting into the billions and into the trillions, because now we're at $800 trillion in bets, they start skimming billions of dollars off the top. This is why, one of the reasons why you had, you know, over a dozen people in Wall Street last year who made more than $2 billion each. And these bets on bets represent no real wealth. Adam Smith pointed out, real wealth is when you make things. If you take a stick and you carve it into an axe handle, you have converted nature into wealth, multi-generational wealth. Derivatives not only represent no wealth, they're total funny money. Again, the GDP of the planet is $65 trillion, and there's $800 trillion worth of these bets out there. It's insane.
Tom Hartman, the host of the Tom Hartman Program, author of The Crash of 2016, The Plot to Destroy America and What We Can Do to Stop It. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, John.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.